compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
A very good morning to you, Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. You're listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I'm here, believe it or not, this was scheduled a long time back to be with you. Don't worry about Patrick, he's fine. In fact, I think he was scheduled to go on a cruise this week, way back when, and I was going to sit in for him. And we know that that cruise got moved to later in the year because of, well, everything that's happening in the world. But we said to Patrick, hey, you deserve a little R&R. You deserve a little time off. So here I am, happy to be with you again to ponder the things of life, to explore God's workings in the world, and of course, to take your questions and to consider your insights as well. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Why do I have all these really curious, interesting things to explore? Why don't we talk about this really interesting, almost philosophical article that I read just yesterday? But before that, let me step back. Cyrus, have you ever seen? By the way, good morning, Cyrus. Good to be with you again.
Hey, good morning, Father. Thank you for being here. We're always so happy to have you around.
Oh, thanks. It's a pleasure. Yeah. Hey, did you ever see that documentary, March of the Penguins?
Oh yeah, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. That's right. Yeah, 2004, 2005, something like that. And I love nature documentaries. Anything that's narrated by David Attenborough to me is just, it just draws me in. I love seeing God's creation, and I love seeing different sides of nature that you don't see normally. Not to mention all of the fascinating insights that we can capture on camera. I remember when March of the Penguins came out and watching that movie and just fascinated by animals that could live in such harsh conditions, animals that had to be social to survive in order to to weather the cold weather, in order to survive in the Antarctic climate. I also remember being a little bit annoyed watching that movie, a little bit, because I get annoyed easily, Cyrus. I'm sorry to say, it's one of my vices that I'm constantly having to battle. But
I'm not seeing it. But if you say you so,
well, I'm very good at internalizing it. Maybe I think this world just like gets on my nerves very quickly, or sin in this world gets on my nerves very quickly, and I've learned, I guess, to maybe not express it so quickly. But I was watching that movie, and I just remember starting to roll my eyes and almost throwing up my hands going, come on, stop turning penguins into humans. You know, it's so easy for us to anthropomorphize nature. And we look at what happens in nature, and then we imagine that somehow it's the same thing that humans go through. In particular, I remember this one scene from there where they're showing the process of mating between penguins, and they're presenting it as if it's true love. They're presenting it as if it's somehow like the relationship between a husband and a wife. And not that there aren't, obviously there are some similarities, there are some parallels maybe, but it reaches a point where we turn nature into our world, and we start to see inside of the animal kingdom, things that belong properly to human beings, like faculties of intelligence, like faculties of free will. And this is what came to mind also when I saw that Netflix documentary just a couple of years ago. I think it came out in 2020, My Octopus Teacher, which I think did I grab a clip of that this morning, Cyrus?
You know, I do have one, yes.
All right. So let me set this up for you. Here's this. If you haven't, have you seen My Octopus Teacher, Cyrus?
I've heard really good things about it, but I've not.
Yeah,
seen it.
So this is a fantastic documentary too. By the way, I don't mean to be too negative about about March of the Penguins because it's great. It's a good documentary. It's really insightful and interesting. I do have some bones to pick, which I'll get to eventually here. But My Octopus Teacher came out a couple years ago. It was started back in 2010. And the story is really fascinating. There was this gentleman who grew up and lived in South Africa and grew up right next to the water in South Africa, which, if you know, is very harsh, very cold, very stormy, dangerous waters. And he would snorkel and dive and explore the kelp forests there. And he loved it as a kid, fell away from doing that as an adult, but slowly started to do that again. And he happened to be going through this maybe a difficult time in his life. He doesn't get into it, if I recall, doesn't explore it real deeply in his life. He doesn't talk about was it depression? Was it this struggle to find meaning in life? But he does talk about, you know, he was finding it hard to focus on work. He was finding it hard to make those connections maybe that were easier to make in life. And so he started to dive and to explore nature. And in the process, he found this little octopus, a common octopus, that he started visiting daily. And at first, the octopus completely was frightened of him, as you might expect. And over a few weeks' time, the octopus became familiar with him and even started to decide that he wasn't a threat to him. And here's a little clip from that documentary. And let me set this up a little bit more. This is from Craig Foster's perspective. He's talking about the octopus and talking about this moment when finally he believes that the octopus now is going to let him into his world.
Finally, after looking for her for a week, day after day, there she was. It's like a human friend, like, waving and saying hi and excited to see you. And I could feel it, like, from one minute to the next. Okay, I trust you. I trust you, human. And now you can come into my octopus world.
I trust you. I don't know. Can animals... I guess they can trust them in the sense that they decide that they're not threats. They can trust them in the sense that they can trust us, in the sense that they believe that we can help them. I think it's different. I think there's a qualitative difference between the trust maybe that an animal has and the trust that humans have in God. But that's a different question. Let me turn to this article that was written last week by Ferris Jabre. It was written on Haika Magazine, I think is how you pronounce it. It's a magazine that is a scientific magazine about the coastal sciences and about the waters around the world, the ocean life around the world. And the title was, Can We Really Be Friends with an Octopus? And that's what made me think of My Octopus Teacher. That's what made me think of March of the Penguins, both award-winning documentaries. Can we really be friends with a creature from such a different world? And what Mr. Jabre explores is, well, we can't really even get into the mind of an octopus. Here's a creature that largely has been understood as very antisocial. They're not social creatures by and large. There are some species of octopodes, I think you say, that will congregate more and spend more time together, but by and large they are creatures that spend the vast majority of their lives alone, only come together to reproduce. And can we as social creatures then enter into some social interactions with a creature that lives underwater, so far removed from our world? I think this is maybe what Pope Francis was trying to get at a couple weeks ago when he was making the point that we as human beings oftentimes will look to our pets and prioritize them above human life. We anthropomorphize our pets even. And by the way, don't get me wrong. I think pets are great. I think God's creation is awesome. I am not belittling this. All I'm saying is that there's a difference there between the relationships that between with another being that has an eternal soul, that has the faculties of free will and reason, and that has an opportunity in that free will to enter into relationship with God in a unique way. That's a very different relationship than what we have with the animal kingdom. And that's what Mr. Jobber is getting at as well. But I do think, and one of the beautiful things that come out of most nature documentaries, it seems to me, is that we get not only a fascination for God's creation, not only an appreciation for for God's creativity and the amazing world in which we live, but it also provides a window into understanding the world better. It provides a mirror to look into our own lives better. That's what Mr. Foster understood after this process. He spent about a year with that octopus daily, visiting that octopus. He saw that octopus go through all kinds of harrowing experiences, not to mention really interesting, curious experiences, seeing the octopus perhaps play and discover the world around it. And then even, as I don't think it would be a spoiler to say that he even sees the end of that octopus's life at the end of the documentary.
Spoilers.
I mean, octopodes live, I think, 1 year, maybe 2 years max. Oh. So, you know, it was kind of inevitable if you knew that you knew that relationship wasn't going to last long, which that's a whole different issue there. Why don't we go to the phones? Enough about animals, maybe. 888-914-9149 is the number to call if you want to be on the Patrick Madrid Show. We'll go to Jeff, who's calling from Rock Island, Illinois. Hello, Jeff. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Jeff, I'm going to put you on hold. Let's see if we can get your audio worked out and see if we can get you back on. That was a little tough to hear you there. Can you be friends with an animal? I know a lot of people have a companion, a pet companion that helps them to get through tough experiences. In fact, I know priests even who, maybe because of their lives and commitments of celibacy, because they don't have a wife, really then find some consolation in their pets with them. But I think that's a secondary relationship that God puts into our life, right? Why don't we look at this story? This was really, really sad, really tragic. I really couldn't ponder how this could even happen. In New York City, it happened on Saturday, I believe. There was a terrible situation in the subways. Now, I the last time I was in New York, I think, was in the year 2000, in fact. It was not long before the September 11th attacks. I have a picture of myself right before the World Trade Center, in fact. And I remember traveling around, going on the subways, and the subways have always presented a challenge for New York City. They've always presented difficulties because of the possibilities and opportunities of crime, because of homelessness, where people will find some shelter down in the subways. And along with homelessness comes mental illness. Let's turn to this story, really sad, really tragic, of a woman who lost her life because she was pushed onto the subway tracks in front of an oncoming train. I think we have a clip here from YLNY ABC New York.
Have arrested a suspect and charged him with murder. 61-year-old Simon Marshall is accused of shoving a woman into a moving subway train at the Times Square station. As CBS 2's Kieran Dillon reports, the police commissioner is calling this incident a senseless act of violence.
This incident was unprovoked, and the victim does not appear to have had any interaction with the subject.
Saturday, Police Commissioner Keyshawn Sewell and Mayor Eric Adams joined MTA Acting Chair Jano Lieber to condemn the violence that took the life of a 40-year-old Asian American woman.
This is a sad day. A New Yorker was going about her business right in the heart of our city, in the heart of our subway system in Times Square, and she lost her life.
Police say it happened at the Times Square station around 9:40 in the morning Saturday. It's alleged a man shoved a 40-year-old Asian woman onto the southbound Q train tracks. She was fatally struck. Before that, police allege he was also taunting another woman who was able to escape unharmed.
He approaches her. He gets in her space. She gets very raised up, very alarmed. She tries to move away from him, and he gets close to her, and she feels that he was about to physically push her onto the train. As she's walking away, she witnesses the crime where he pushes the other our other victim in front of the train.
Police say after the incident, the suspect turned himself in.
Yeah, terrible. My goodness. The story goes on. The gentleman would then, as the reporter started to say, turned himself into the police. This is not the first time he's been involved in some criminal activity. In fact, he had a warrant out for his arrest. It's senseless, so terrible. What really, the reason I'm bringing it up again now is that just yesterday I saw that his sister spoke up. The sister of the man who perpetrated this act came out and just totally distraught, horrified by the actions of her brother, but also pointing out her brother has been extremely ill mentally for many years. I guess he's suffered from schizophrenia. He's suffered from the effects of schizophrenia and mental illness that have gone untreated, uncared for. And she's of course very upset. His sister at the loss of life of this young woman. On the other hand, pointing out there's a crisis here besides a crime. There's also a health issue. How many people are struggling in the world without the help that they need, without the support that they need in order to survive, in order to avoid falling into terrible situations like this? Let's pray for everybody involved. This was so sad over the weekend. I remember reading about this on Saturday, and then learning that the man himself was also very ill and also needs a lot of help himself. We'll keep all involved in our prayers, and certainly do what we can to help those with mental illness. We're going to take a quick time out here. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, really pleased to be with you today, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. I'll be back right after this.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Father Matthew Spencer, happy to be with you today. Of course, we know the March for Life is coming up and the Walk for Life in San Francisco also coming up this weekend. Both are coming up in just a few days. We have seen a lot of progress on the life issues in the last few years. Thanks be to God. We've seen some movement in the Supreme Court, at least some indications that maybe our courts will finally move to defend life better. I think we still have a long way to go, don't we? We still have a long way to go in defending life. Not only the unborn, certainly they're the most vulnerable and the ones that are most desperately in need of our support and our protection, but life at all stages, life that needs to be respected and cared for, whether it's at the beginning of our lives or even at the end, whether it's when we're being cared for by doctors or we're stuck alone at home, how much their work there is to do in defending life. So make sure that you support all these endeavors, all these efforts to protect life, whether it's going to D.C. and marching, whether it's going to San Francisco and walking. Maybe it's supporting your local pro-life ministries and certainly praying the rosary at your local abortion center. But one way that you can also support life is by joining us in our annual fast for life, which we do every year here at Relevant Radio, of course. Tell us how you plan to pray and sacrifice for the unborn at relevantradio.com/fast. This year, Relevant Radio and Solidarity Health Share are proud to offer our Fast for Life participants a free bonus ebook download. It's called The Choice is Love. There are various questions that this ebook will answer, such as, if the fetus is so small that it can't survive apart from the mother, is it really a human being at that point? Of course, the answer is yes, but maybe you need some support and help in how to dialogue about that. So The Choice is Love is a great tool for you to have in your repertoire to help you in responding to several popular arguments with compassion. So join us and join Relevant Radio and Solidarity Health Share this Friday for the Fast for Life. Go to relevantradio.com/fast and get your free download of The Choice is Love today. That's relevantradio.com/fast. I was thinking, I've never been to the March for Life, and that's because most of my ministry has taken place on the West Coast of the United States. But I have been to the Walk for Life, not every year because I haven't been able to make it every year, but nearly every year, including the first one. I was there at the first one, I believe it was 2005, if my memory serves me correctly. And it was rather small, at least relatively small at that point, because it was a new effort. And there was so much opposition in the city. I remember feeling completely outnumbered by the pro-abortion demonstrators who were I couldn't believe the things they were saying. I couldn't believe the vile slogans they were pushing and the accusations they were making about the very peaceful pro-life walkers. I guess this is a fact of life everywhere. When we stand up for God's plan, there will be those that oppose it in very offensive ways. But I do remember walking down the street at that time. I believe we went partly on Market Street there in San Francisco, famous street that goes through the heart of downtown. And I was walking thinking, where are all of these counter protesters coming from? You know, we had, I don't know the numbers at the time, I want to say 10,000-15,000 people maybe for the Walk for Life, if that. And it seemed like there were three times the number of people opposed to the plan and to our efforts to Walk for Life. Well, then I realized pretty quickly I was seeing the same people over and over. I'd be walking and 20 minutes later I'd see the same. And at first I thought, are they just wearing the same garments? Are they carrying the same signs and I'm just getting confused? But no, they were people who would stake out one little corner, would yell at the pro-life pro-life demonstrators walking by, and then they'd get on their bikes, run real fast to the front of the line, and all of a sudden appearing to be much more active and much more numerous than they were. And the reason I share that with you is whenever we stand up for life, there will be these distractions or be these illusions that somehow we are in the minority. Or illusions that somehow that the opposition is too strong for us, which is not the case. We might be in the minority. Who knows? Sometimes it happens that the values of the Lord become a minority perspective in the world. It's happened in the history of our Christian church. We've experienced that when not everybody stands up for God's plan and God's law. But we will never, never be outnumbered. We will never be overwhelmed. Why? Because, well, if this is what the Lord wants, if the Lord wants the protection of the unborn, if the Lord wants the protection of those who are most vulnerable, then He's going to support you. He's going to support that movement. And I've seen that over and over again. Maybe you've seen that. Maybe that's a witness that you're able to share with your families. That despite feeling like the world is so pro-death, that in spite of feeling like the world is so much opposed to God's plan for life, in fact, we can see that the Holy Spirit is very much at work in the pro-life movement, and very much at work even in the world, even in society, transforming and changing hearts. I think it was Archbishop Corleone who wouldn't be the first to say it. Certainly, it's not his thought, but is indeed the thought of the whole pro-life movement, that the point is not changing laws. The point is to make abortion unthinkable. The point is to make sure that the hearts and minds of all people realize the value of every human life. Well, how do they do that? They do that first by us standing up and saying, we're not going to go with the currents of the world. We're not going to be swept away by the values that the world wants to embrace. Instead, we're going to recognize the value of every single human life. We're going to protect the smallest and most vulnerable among us. Since I started working with Relevant Radio years past, this has always been one of the key efforts of our ministries here. One of the most important things we do, in my opinion, to pray for life, certainly, as you know, our Memorare campaign that's been going on for several years now, to pray for the end of abortion, for the changing of hearts around the world. Also, giving you a platform to speak, a platform to make sure that you can share your thoughts as well, whether that's on the Drew Mariani Show, whether that's right here on the Patrick Madrid Show, and also helping bring this message to a world that thinks it's a fringe opinion, that thinks it's a rather unpopular, maybe simply out of date perspective. We say, no, that's not the case, is it? God is for life, and therefore you and I are for life as well. God wants all of us to have the opportunity to live. God wants all of us to experience the support and protection of a faith-filled community. So what are you doing for life? Are you going to be marching in D.C.? Are you going to be walking in San Francisco? I know the opportunities to participate are curtailed a little bit. Maybe you feel that because of your health, it's not the right time, which is okay. I think the pandemic has made it a little harder to gather in person for these events. And maybe it's not for everybody to be able to do that. It's partly why I think that this opportunity to fast for life is really special. And maybe really, really opportune for you, because maybe you can't go out and pray before your local abortion center right now. Maybe it's because of the weather, or maybe it's because of your health concerns. The truth is that we can never let down our guard in this area. We can never stop protecting the unborn and never turn a blind eye to them. And also what it means is helping those who are in need. And what I am so proud of as a Catholic is that it's not only about opposing abortion, it's also about helping mothers who are in crises, helping fathers who are contemplating making a terrible decision, and giving them a glimmer of hope. And not only hope, but help. Giving them support, giving them the means that they need to care for the life that God has blessed them with. What does that mean? It means some baby food. It means maybe some diapers. It means maybe some financial help. Maybe moral support is what is most needed for young mothers and young fathers. We all need different things, don't we? And especially those who are experiencing an unexpected pregnancy, who are thinking about an abortion, they need some support and help. And I think that's so evident in our efforts as Catholics, isn't it? That we're not only standing up against abortion, but we're standing up for life, and we're standing up to help those who are in great need. We're standing up to help those who really desire to do God's will, but feel or experience that they have no other option. We say, no, there is the possibility of preserving this life, and there is the option to choose life. And here, let us help you. So yeah, as we're working together as Catholics, as we're working together as Christians to support life, let's also remember, besides marching, besides fasting, as important and as special as that can be, such a powerful means, spiritual means in the world, we also know that part of our efforts are for us to give, to provide our time, to support and encourage those in need. It was just maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I remember, more like 6 weeks ago now, I think, at our shrine, we started to contemplate, well, how can we help those in need? And there are different movements that we can help with. There are local houses, homes where I live, to help young mothers who have just had babies and need somewhere to live. So we support them financially. There are movements that will provide these material resources. And then, of course, there are counseling places that will give young mothers and young fathers very solid advice, not just the very, very limited perspective that they might get if they go to, say, a Planned Parenthood center. But instead we'll say, no, don't turn to abortion, but instead choose life. And here's how you do that. Here's how we can help. And here's how you can ultimately find happiness, along with the challenge and the struggle that might take, that might demand. It's true, parenthood always is going to require sacrifice. And especially for a young mother and a young father, it's going to be a challenging step, but it's worth it. It's totally worth it. It's worth it not only because of the life in the womb, it's worth it because by sacrificing our time, by giving of our very selves, we find fulfillment. We find happiness. We find a path to real joy, don't we? So I'm really excited at this time of year. Whenever these weeks in January are leading up to the Walk for Life and the March for Life, I get energized about the pro-life movement. I get excited because through all the dark times we've lived in the last 50 years, through all the terrible decisions that we've seen in our society, and cutting through all the evil endeavors and projects that are out there to snuff out the lives of the unborn, a light is shining. A light is shining that comes from Christ that you and I can help carry and bring to the world. And that's why I always get excited about being able to stand up for life, because I think you and I are seeing in our times, finally, a turning of the tide. It's going to still take time. It's going to still take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of effort. But boy, is it worth it. There's a lot of joy that comes when we cooperate with the Lord and stand for life. We'll take a quick time out. Thanks for allowing me that opportunity. I just had to share some of those thoughts because I really feel that our work protecting the unborn and helping those who are in crisis is so important, so needed in the world, and what a time to do it here as we're preparing for the Walk for Life and the March for Life. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick Madrid. When we get back, we'll go to, I think Marie is waiting on the lines. If you want to call, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Father Matthew Spencer here. Happy to be sitting in for Patrick today. Yeah, 400 million memorare, Cyrus told me at the break there. Probably over 400 million memorare,
to be exact. 421,428,801 prayers to end abortion.
That's wild. So for years, we at Relevant Radio have been encouraging you, and not only encouraging you, but ourselves, praying the memorare daily, even for the protection of the unborn and the end to abortion in our country, in the world, in the minds and hearts of everybody. And we started tracking how many memorares were said. You can go to the app and mark down each day that you're saying your memorare, tallying those up. And so when I mentioned it in the last segment there, I hadn't seen that number for some time, and it's growing.
Yeah.
I don't want to say exponentially, but my goodness,
Father Rocky started this a long time. I wish I remembered when he did it, but it's been years. And I remember when it started, there was no chance Roe v. Wade was ever going to be overturned, as you know, from what I could see of the future. And I was like, well, you know, it's good to pray, but this is just a lost cause. Well, I am so happy to say I'm wrong. That look at these prayer works.
Yeah,
it works. Who knew?
It's like, whoa, wow, it does work. I know. Well, I think what happens is we get so accustomed to the status quo, and we think, well, we've been praying for this. I mean, before you and I were even born, Cyrus, people right. were praying for the end to this, and just for the protection of life in general. And we think, well, that's such an amazing goal, so far from the mind of society. It just doesn't seem like it's even ever going to happen. But I think we're maybe reaching a point where in fact people are starting to realize that there is more to life than just what I want. There is more to life than just how I see it. And it's an exciting time to be alive, although we can't just sit on our laurels and wait for this to change. We have to do our part too. So pray your memorares, walk, stand out on street corners, and shout from the rooftops that God loves all people, especially the unborn, and he wants us to work to protect them. I do want to go to Marie, but before we do, just a quick question from a listener who wrote in asking about the curse of the fig tree. Jesus, of course, in Matthew and in Mark's gospel, there's this event recounted where Jesus will see. Well, how about we just read it? Let's turn to Matthew 21. Let me pull this up here. I believe it's verse 18. Yeah, verse 18 and forward. When Jesus was going back to the city, to Jerusalem in the morning, he was hungry. Seeing a fig tree by the road, he went over to it, but found nothing on it except leaves. And he said to it, "May no fruit ever come from you again." And immediately the fig tree withered. When the disciples saw this, they were amazed and said, "How was it that the fig tree withered immediately?" And Jesus said to them in reply, "Amen, I say to you, if you have faith and do not waver, not only will you do what has been done to the fig tree, but even if you say to this mountain, 'Be lifted up and thrown into the sea,' it will be done. Whatever you ask for in prayer with faith, you will receive," Jesus says. Well, this is the gospel passage that our listener was referring to. And the question is basically, why? Why did Jesus curse the fig tree if the fruit wasn't in season yet? It seems a little extreme. Well, I think that to understand it, we have to look and see what the gospel writers understood here, and then also look at this event in context. I think fig trees in general, the fruit generally appears before the leaves appear. I'm not a botanist, and I don't know about caring for fruit trees, but I'm pretty sure that fig trees, the fruit will precede the leaves. So my understanding of how this passage is normally interpreted is that if they saw the leaves, they were to presume that in fact there would be fruit there, even if it was not quite in season, even if they came a little bit earlier than the harvest might be for that fig tree. And so they saw the appearance of a tree that they expected to have fruit on it, and then when they approached, they didn't. The tree didn't. So there are a couple of layers of meaning here, I think. On the one hand, appearance is not enough. Your life might look fruitful. It might look like there's a lot of green foliage on it and it's alive and healthy. But if it's not bearing fruit, there's a real problem. There has to be more than just the side effects of growth in our life. There has to be actually the fruitfulness that comes. I would say that's one meaning that we can glean from this account. But also there is the important meaning that Jesus arrives at in showing that, well, in prayer, anything can happen. In prayer, whatever you ask for can be done by the power of God. So I think there's several lessons here that Jesus is teaching. And certainly we could tie this to his entry in Jerusalem. I mean, this happens right before Jesus' own passion and death, and there's certainly a symbol of the need for a life to be fruitful. Otherwise, it will wither away, and of what use is that? So those are some thoughts, Tom. Thanks for asking. I think every event in the life of Jesus is so rich, has such important lessons for us. But oftentimes there are many different lessons we can glean from those, right? 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go to Marie, who's calling from Oakland. Hello, Marie. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Hi, Father. I have a question about people bringing pets into church. Is there any guidance about it? Because I was at Mass and somebody brought a German Shepherd in about a third of the way through Mass this Sunday. And just a side note, the interesting thing was it was quiet the whole time, but during Transfiguration, it started whimpering like crazy. The person took the dog out. But I was just wondering if there's any guidance in general about people bringing dogs into Mass, because maybe it can be a little bit distracting.
Yeah. I don't know that there is any official guidance on this, Marie. That's a good question. I don't know that I've read anything from the church documents or even from local bishops' documents saying one way or the other. There is one question. Many times there are animals that serve as service animals, whether for the blind or for maybe emotional needs that a person has. And service animals are very helpful, but they're also generally trained very well. They're supposed to be trained very well. And sometimes a service animal in training will come in, and I'm always happy to have them in Mass, because I know that they will go on to, and they have to learn how to behave in this different environment. But usually those service animals and service animals in training have identifying features on them, right? They have a collar of some sort, or even a vest that will indicate that they're on duty. So my first thought, Marie, before getting up in arms about it myself, would be to say, well, was there a legitimate reason that this dog was at Mass that might be serving the needs of the people there? And there are maybe some times where that's the case, either a service animal or a service animal in training. But on the other hand, people, it goes back to our conversation just a little while ago at the top of the hour, doesn't it? How people have made their pets their friends and their companions to a degree that I think is unprecedented in human history, that we treat them very differently and almost sometimes even like royalty. I'm not trying to criticize pets, but on the other hand, I think there are places for pets and places where pets shouldn't be present. And in Mass, if animals are causing distractions to the humans that are there, that can become a problem. So, I probably share your concern, Marie. I don't know. You know, I try to have a balanced approach to it. You know, on the one hand, maybe there's a legitimate reason there, but on the other hand, I don't think we should bring our animals to Mass without one of those good reasons. And I don't know, in this case, the one you describe, whether there would be a good reason there.
I think that sounds about right. And the tough thing with an emotional support animal is you can't always know if the person with the animal needs that animal. So
yeah, this it is hard to tell, isn't it? You know, I can share with you, Marie. We opened a coffee shop at the Shrine where I worked a couple of years ago, and it introduced this whole different. See, I've never had to operate a quote unquote business before. It's a ministry, but we also have to treat it like a business, and we have to comply with ADA requirements. And the ADA is very clear that service animals have to be accommodated in most businesses. And also there are limitations about what you can ask and how you can determine whether that's a service animal. And I understand why that's the case. But on the other hand, there are people, and we've had this encounter with people that abuse those laws in order to try and bring their pet into a place that maybe isn't appropriate for them. And that's really sad to me. It's sad to me for those people who really need service animals. That other people, I'm thinking of a particular individual that we had that brought in an animal that was very poorly behaved and barking at other customers and jumping at them, and it was just clearly not trained the way it should be. But you're not allowed to ask. There are certain things you can do at that point when the dog is not under control, but it certainly does make life much more difficult for those who legitimately benefit from service animals. And I think the same will be true when it comes to Mass and to our faith. So thanks a lot, Marie. Thanks for calling. A very, very interesting question.
Okay.
All right. God bless you now. Take care. I think we have time for Sylvia, who's calling from Miami. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I've been thinking a lot about this problem with Catholics continuing to support and vote for pro-abortionists. I think it's a great contradiction of our faith. Honestly, I think it's hypocritical. I go to do the rosary at like Planned Parenthood and all that, and occasionally I encounter Catholics who are actually continue to vote. So I just find that I personally feel like that becomes an accomplice to a crime. The Catholics are becoming, accomplice to the crime of the greatest crime of the century, because they keep putting people in power who are going to make sure that abortion will remain legal. They continue to fund it and expand it around the world. So I just think that's something that has to be addressed, that Catholics need to boycott pro-abortion candidates and a party like the Democrats who support it. So I'm really scandalized by such Catholics when they do that. And I find it so hypocritical when I see them marching for pro-life. I've encountered some. So I think we need to really make it clear that Catholics have to stop this, because you become an accomplice to the crime of abortion. That's what I think. And I think it's true.
Yeah, thank you, Sylvia. I mean, just a few minutes ago, as we were talking about Catholics standing up for life, you're right. When a Catholic supports abortion, especially a Catholic who is in a position of authority or in a position of political influence, not only is it sinful, it's a scandal. It creates confusion in the world. It creates confusion in the hearts of Catholics all around, and it makes it very difficult to actually for the rest of the church to stand up and say this isn't okay, this isn't all right, that in fact somebody who says they're Catholic is now promoting something that's diametrically opposed to the gospel, completely opposed to that. Thanks, Sylvia. I think it's a very good observation, and I think this is something that not only Catholic politicians are called to witness to and are going to be held to very, very important standards, very high standards by the Lord for their witness or maybe their lack thereof. I think it's also very important for us as Catholic voters to vote for those who are going to defend life, to vote for those who will really stand up for life, to vote for those who will be people of integrity. I know that politics is hard, and I know that there are compromises to make. I know that none of these things are easy, and I know even to get elected in our time is difficult, and our society just doesn't seem to elect very many people who are going to live their lives completely with integrity. I'm sorry to say, but especially when it comes to the life issues, that can never be an excuse. That can never be a pretext to say, well, I guess I'm going to compromise on these values for politically expedient reasons. That's not how we can live our lives. We have to be people of integrity, don't we? We have to be people who are living the gospel in a radical way, in a convicted way. And what that means is for us to stand up for life, whether it's in the voting booth, whether it's marching and walking, or whether it's praying our memoraries. That's what we have to do. Thanks, Sylvia. Appreciate the insight. I'm Father Matthew Spencer, sitting in for Patrick. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. When we get back, I hope we can get to Memo. And if you want to join the conversation too, you're most welcome. Be right back.